Hello and welcome. You're watching Left, Right and Center. I'm Nidhi Razdan. Well, in a few minutes from now, the Prime Minister will land in Samarkand in Uzbekistan, where leaders of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization or the SCO are meeting tomorrow. He will come face to face with President Xi of China, President Putin of Russia and Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif. With all three, India has a tricky relationship at the moment. While Russia has announced a bilateral between Mr. Modi and President Putin, so far no formal meeting is expected with China or Pakistan. Just 2 days before the summit, India and China finished disengagement in Ladakh after a more than two-year-long standoff, raising expectations of a possible summit meeting. This is the first time since the Galwan clashes of 2020 that Mr. Modi and Mr. Xi will meet face-to-face. As for Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, a pull-aside could be possible, but only for India to express condolences for the loss of lives in the recent floods that ravaged Pakistan. The SCO comprises China, Russia, India, Pakistan and four Central Asian nations. It's the world's largest regional organization, covering approximately 60% of the area of Eurasia, 40% of the world population and more than 30% of the global GDP. So that gives you a sense of why the SCO is important. Well, joining us first on the program tonight is India's former Foreign Secretary, Nirupama Rao. Thanks very much for joining us, ma'am. Just to first get your take on this, will they, won't they meeting between President Xi and Prime Minister Modi, given the recent disengagement, do you think that it would be good for them to actually meet in a formal structured way, or do you think it's too soon for that?
Well, I really can't foretell how the proceedings at Samarkand will quite pan out. I know there's been a lot of speculation about a possible meeting between Prime Minister Modi and President Xi Jinping, but there's no real surety that such a meeting would actually take place. I don't believe we will ask for a bilateral meeting. It is possible that the Chinese may put out some feelers for some kind of face-to-face interaction between Mr. Xi Jinping and Prime Minister Modi, but we really can't say. Of course, it has been a welcome development, a positive development that a further degree of disengagement has been announced in Ladakh over the last few days at Patrol Point 15. But the tensions in the bilateral relationship between India and China have by no means dissipated. I think the Galwan incident caused grievous harm to the relationship, and I don't believe you can really say that relations between India and China are on the mend.
Would you say then, therefore, it would be wise for India to still maintain a degree of distance and not let it be business as usual?
Well, I think the default position for India would be to maintain that degree of distance. We've spoken about the need for the three mutuals in the relationship that the foreign minister has kept referring to: mutual interest, mutual sensitivity, and mutual respect. And that is something that China, I believe, has to learn all over again, not only where India is concerned, but also as far as the rest of the Indo-Pacific is concerned.
Final question, Nirupama Rao, which is that, you know, India very much a part of the SCO, but India is also very much a part of the Quad. How does New Delhi do the sort of balancing act of being a part of the Quad on one side, but then talking to Putin and Xi on the other?
Well, I think it's all a part of geopolitics and an agile and deft foreign policy that India, very much a country at the center of geopolitics today in our region and as far as Asia is concerned, has to practice. And the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is an important neighborhood association. It expresses our outreach to Central Asia. We have strategic interests. We have security interests. Speak of counterterrorism, for instance. We have energy interests, we have trade and economic cooperation and connectivity to pursue with the region. So it's a kind of geopolitical straddle, I believe. Others refer to it as hedging, but I would say it's more of a geopolitical straddle.
All right, Nirupama Rao, thank you very much, ma'am, for joining us. You have, of course, been a foreign secretary as well as ambassador to China, so you understand the country perhaps better than many of us here today. Let me go straight across to our other panelists tonight. And General Satish Dhua, the former chief of the Integrated Defense Staff, is with us. And in fact, a nice tweet you put out today, General Dhua, earlier today, how, you know, you had overseen military exercises that India took part in under the SCO in 2018, where, you know, you were side by side with the Pakistani and Chinese military. That was, I think, 2018, if I'm not mistaken. So we've really come a long way since then. But General Dhua, I actually wanted to ask you firstly about this disengagement in Ladakh, because apart from the opposition, Congress, which has raised questions on it, a councillor from Ladakh has also expressed some concern that India has ended up conceding to the creation of a buffer zone in its own territory while agreeing to withdraw troops at this particular point. Can you explain to us what would be the reality on the ground?
Look, Nidhi, first of all, the tweet that you mentioned was a different reality. It also shows how in a group dynamics, sometimes bilateral dynamics takes a little backseat. And I think that's the very purpose of such multilateral relationship groupings. Coming to your question proper about the issues of disengagement and the dynamics that it has thrown up. Yes, I also know about, I saw on NDTV, the counselor there has spoken about a buffer zone being created. Let me just try and demystify that for everyone. So far, we have a claim line of the LAC and China has a claim line of LAC. Both of them don't necessarily match. In fact, they don't match at all. They don't match. So our claim line is several kilometers or a couple of kilometers or several kilometers inside what Chinese claim is their territory. And so by the same token, their claim line is a few kilometers or whatever distance inside our territory by our claim line. So what that entails is that we have an area of a few kilometers which is different at different points, where both of us claim that land. So instead of a no man's land, here we have something, this is my term, both man's land. And the peace and tranquility agreement between the two countries lays down, for decades we've been following this, that we are allowed to patrol up to our claim line. They are allowed to patrol up to their claim line. But we are not allowed to construct anything in that disputed area. And so over the years that we saw clashes and standoffs and face-offs happening when two patrols came face to face in that area. Now, and Galwan was one such incident that went horribly wrong, and then there were other flashpoints. And now we are seeing disengagement at some of the flashpoints where we came face to face. We were never deployed face to face like the LOC again.
Are you saying that if India has pushed back, so have they from their?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me. I'm just coming to that, and that's the last thing I want to make. Yeah. That last point I want to make is when we came face to face at all these places, Gogra Hot Springs, PP-15 from which we have disengaged just a couple of days ago. Earlier, we disengaged from Pegongso Lake and four different points we've done so far over the last 2 years, 1.5 years. So what has happened is that we had actually come face to face or eyeball to eyeball, very close, where anything, a stray firing incident by a soldier, unintentional also, could spiral into an uncontrolled incident. So it is very much required that we disengage. So over a period of meetings, 16, 17 meetings have taken place, and this disengagement process has started. Now to this question of buffer zone. What is the disengagement? Disengagement says you go back to push back to certain distance. We will push back to a certain distance so that we are away from at least small arms fire of each other. So that we don't spark off an unintended incident. The counselor, that this statement that he has made on NDTV amongst others, is saying that this buffer zone has been created. It has taken away grazing rights of our people, which may be right, because graziers may be going to that place for grazing. But now in the interest of security, the government says we are disengaging till we get to de-escalation, that means the troops pull back much further.
I get what you're saying about that difference there. Let me get to the other panelists as well. Tanvi Madan, senior fellow with Brookings, joining us as well tonight. Tanvi, of course, you've written a book on China. You know it so well. How do you see this playing out over the next 24 hours? Do you think you can predict a bilateral meeting, or do you think it might be a little more informally structured given the situation?
Historians don't predict, so I won't predict, but I can, you know, you can see the pros and cons for a meeting like this. And the pros being that often India has either used the prospect of such a leader level meeting to try to actually use that as leverage, and especially China's desire. Xi Jinping wants to go into a 20th Party Congress with some wins, so they might be trying to use that to get him to make some concessions. The other reality is that often these decisions, especially about anything like de-escalation, can only happen at the top from Xi Jinping. And so the case to actually meet is often that it is worthwhile to have that discussion. While having said that, keeping in perspective, as Ambassador Rao said, that the tensions in the relationship are not going to go anywhere. And I personally don't think we're going to see a situation where the relationship goes back to the status quo April, May 2020, because there's too much water under the bridge. But the cons of it are, you know, as other panelists, including Suhasini, have written about, is, are you sending a signal that you've gone back to business as usual? China will use it to say, look, we've been saying we should put the border issue aside and go back to the broader relationship. And so do they take that as a message that India is fine with doing that? And do others see it as a concession? So I think those are the pros and cons, and I think they'll be weighed. The reality is the leaders have engaged in these multilateral settings. So it's also possible that they have, you know, one of these kind of drive-by meetings, so to speak, unstructured or informal, really informal summit.
Suhasini Heather is, in fact, joining us, the diplomatic affairs editor of The Hindu, and she is in Samarkand. She's covering that story there. So, Suhasini, thanks for taking the time out to do this. Interesting, I thought, and if you could weigh in on this, there's an informal meeting of the leaders of the SCO this evening, and the Prime Minister is not attending that. He's landing any minute now, but he's not going to be part of that informal meeting, which included a nice boat ride. Do you read more into that? Would it have been a little awkward, you think, to have that kind of an informal meeting on the eve of a summit?
Absolutely. And I think it is a very significant message, because remember, every other leader of the SCO, at least, there are also either 8 SCO leaders here or 7 invitees, arrived at some point during the day on Thursday. They've all been holding bilateral meetings through the day. Prime Minister Modi very purposefully seems to be landing after the dinner and after that boat ride. So clearly after the photo ops of which would indicate that there was more bonhomie than he perhaps wants to project at this time. Even so, on Friday morning, he is going to be a face-to-face with both Mr. Xi as well as Mr. Sharif. He is expected to meet at least with the Russian President Vladimir Putin, with the Uzbek President as well, and there are indications that he will be meeting the Iranian President as well. In all that we've heard so far, I want to just add really to what Tanvi had said and what Ambassador Rao had said. What we're not looking at is what is the role Russia is going to play, and particularly Mr. Putin is going to play. Because we have seen in the past, when ties between India and China have been very tense, it is the Russian side that has perhaps stepped in to encourage the two sides to speak. We saw it during the SCO foreign ministers meeting in 2020. So the question of whether Mr. Putin is going to try and play that role between these two leaders, that's going to be one of the big questions. The second is, if you look back to the Doklam standoff, and, you know, there are no comparisons that can be made except that it is possible that there was a disengagement at PP15 a week ago. This has made space for Mr. Modi and Mr. Xi, perhaps, to come face to face, to exchange pleasantries, at least, while they're at the same conference where they will be all morning, and then for a lunch. And that could be followed up by another meeting, as we saw in 2017, when Prime Minister Modi went to Xiamen, despite all that had happened in Doklam. And we do know that in 2 months from now, in November, there will be the Bali summit, where both leaders are expected to attend.
Right. Well, you know, there has been a political dimension to this in India, of course, with a lot of criticism from the opposition that the government has been less than transparent on the sort of border issue with China. And we have Lalitha Kumaramangalam of the BJP with us. Lalitha Kumaramangalam, I think the main criticism is that we heard from Mr. Modi soon after Galwan to say that, you know, no inch of territory essentially has been ceded to the Chinese. But we've heard nothing after that. Should he not at least talk to Parliament about what the situation is?
Look, the Indo-Chinese lack of felicity is a historical issue. As our ex-Foreign Secretary Nirupama Rao, who's an expert on China, said, this is not going to go away very immediately. This is a long-term, issue that both India and China have to deal with a great deal of calm, with a great deal of nuancement, with a great deal of measured, approach on both sides. What happened at Galwan, there is an enormous amount of ill will between the two countries that was there then. I think both sides have done a great deal to also try and minimize it. And as General Dua explained, we still, it's not as if we are the best of friends, and I don't think anybody expects us to become, you know, bum chums, you know, even a medium period of time, forget about short.
But how this, does any of that prevent Mr. Modi from talking to the, from talking to Parliament, from at least briefing Parliament,
when that particular skirmish did happen, post it, whatever the government felt was, could actually be talked out in talked about in public. I think they were briefed by both our foreign minister and Mr. Modi, both of whom are known for being very nuanced and measured in their speech. Now, after that, it has died down. So what is the point in constantly bringing up an issue that was a sort of a very chafing issue for both countries, one, and two, post the sort of what was the word that General Dua used? That is the, you know, a sort of measured disengagement that seems to have happened now. Why rake up an old issue which is not going to do anybody any good? Now, the SCO summit is also
because
not
all
just
we
about
get to
foreign
know
relations.
About, I think all we get so, to really look, know about Ladakh.
Look, this summit, one second,
because I have to go to the others as well.
Finish.
I think I'll come back. Ma'am, one second.
Let
I'll come back to you. I think the point is everything we hear about Ladakh is coming from media reports and no official briefings. Everything we're hearing about Ladakh and what is happening at the border has come in the last 2 years from media reports, analysts, expert comments, not directly from the government itself. But you're saying it's a sensitive issue and it needs to be handled differently.
The government has said as much as they feel they could say
okay.
As the government.
Let
me
take that to Nasser Hussain, Rajya Sabha MP of the Congress. Mr. Hussain, would you concede that these are unusual circumstances? If the Prime Minister can't say anything publicly about it, would you have preferred that at least maybe an all-party meeting where he could talk to you all about it in confidence?
Nidhi, I think this is one of the many issues that the opposition has been raising in both the houses of parliament for the past one and a half year. Every time there is a session, we try and ask for a discussion on national security, especially Chinese aggression on our borders. But neither the defense minister, neither the external affairs minister, nor the prime minister of the country has made a statement on this issue, one. And if you think that there are certain things which cannot be discussed in public, which cannot be put up in public domain, then there is always an all-party meeting. There could be a separate sitting with the opposition parties, or there could be a joint parliamentary committee which can sit and discuss where these things could be diverged. But what is more important today is that this SCSO summit is taking place after a pandemic, especially during after the Ukraine-Russia war has started and the Chinese aggression on Indian borders. Will these issues be raised? Because SCSO is supposed to be an organization for regional cooperation, for regional stability and for military engagement. If these issues can't be raised there or if these issues cannot be discussed there, I don't know how there can be regional stability and regional cooperation in this area. That is point number one. Point number two, I as a member of parliament would definitely, expect the prime minister of the country to raise this Chinese incursion issue in this forum, because he has to use this forum to start a discussion with the Chinese counterparts.
Okay. In fact, we've just got live pictures there. The Prime Minister has landed in Samarkand. Sohasni, get ready. You're going to get busy in a few moments. But Tanvi Madan, just on this question of the communication on the China issue, it's actually not new to this government. Previous governments also have been very reluctant to have, shall we say, more open communication with the media on, you know, India-China relations when things get a little sticky at the border. Is that a wise course to take?
You know, the reason for that has been is partly because, as General Dua pointed out, you know, this is an undemarcated border. So even from a kind of what constitutes the line and territory is kind of, you know, ambiguous, though both sides have claims. The second thing is, Indian governments felt the lessons they learned from the late 1950s was that Prime Minister Nehru took this border crisis public, and it became then hard to negotiate. Now, one could argue that it was good he took it public because he was being transparent with the public. But the lesson people learned is that it tied the government's hands, both in terms of negotiating way out of a crisis, but also the dispute more broadly. So that has been the reason for it. Having said that, I think it would be good. In democracies, governments should be transparent. These days, it's also hard not to be transparent because you have open source intelligence and people can see what's going on. So it seems like there's a disconnect sometimes. So I'd like to see more of what Raksha Mantri Rajnath Singh did. I think it was a year ago or maybe more, where he did give a speech to parliament. And I think he's done it a couple of times. So I think there should be more of that. To the point that it doesn't, you know, you want to try to keep your negotiating hand open, but I think that has to be balanced with, in any democracy, transparency, and this is what makes India different from China.
Absolutely. General Dua, very simple question. Do you trust them? Even if the disengagement is done, would you trust them?
I think if the disengagement is done at a military-to-military level, at the tactical level, we would trust. But then, after having said that, but we would always like to verify our things on ground as per our standard operating procedures, as should be the case.
All right. Well, I'm completely out of time. Thank you very much to all of you for joining us. Let's see how these meetings pan out tomorrow, what shape they take, and whether there will be any formal meetings in the first place. See you again. Good night.